Hi, everyone, and welcome to this lovely Sunday time for blessing. I feel already so blessed by this beautiful day and by all of you being here. I think one of the most important things to remind you is to check in, first of all, with all the blessings you already have. You know, there's really a principle in life on every level is that like attracts like. Whether we're just cooking something we want to, have for lunch, we think about, okay, well, what do I like? You know, what you like and what your body likes will determine how many nutrients you actually draw from it. There's this principle of like works with like all through life and everything. You go to a community meeting, you look around the room, and you find someone that you already know you kind of like, or maybe you like a lot, and you walk over to them, start up a conversation, and then, you know what happens? People are going to start drawing into you and your friends, and other friends will find you, and pretty soon you'll have a little micro community over there sharing ideas. And the effort it would have taken for you, instead of going to meet your friend, you just go across the room and you open up with a stranger. Well, that's not a bad thing to do. I think it's a doggone good thing to do. But it's not going to be as efficient, because first thing you're going to have to do is introduce yourself and then ask basic questions like, oh, where do you work? Do you live here? The racket that comes about from just getting acquainted. And even after you get acquainted, you don't know how much positive energy is there, but you're glad you do it. So you go introduce yourself to somebody else, and then someone else and someone else, until you finally generate that energy that you wanted. You could have done the same thing in 5 minutes less by going to the one you already know you like who likes you. You generate that connective energy. You know, it's the same thing in cooking. It's the same thing in working with ideas or painting. When I find a subject I really like, that painting's going to work. And so I'm not saying that you should just only stick with things that you like, but the point today is call up your blessings. Blessings attract more blessings. And this is statistically confirmed in the New Testament records of the teachings and life of Christ. For every miracle he performed, for every blessing he gave, he began with gratitude to God his Father for all the previous blessings that were there. That was his thank you for the pre-existing blessing, was the opening to all of his teaching, all of his prayers. And, you know, if that's what worked for him, I think it's really good advice to work for us. So let's just, you don't have to say a formal prayer. Just look around you. Look at your weather. Think about friends you have in life or something that's actually working for you. Something that's making your life better. Those are all blessings. They all are. The odds of there being as many right things as you have are very small, except for grace, except for blessing. And so I'm just going to give you a minute to think about that, contemplate it, focus on it, and express your gratitude. And while you're thinking about that, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to start a regimen. You know, those of you who've been following us for a while, you know that for a good portion of last year and even the year before, we were going through all of the chapters of Love Without End and really taking them on as a study challenge that we would dig into them, really extract the savory goodness from each chapter and apply it to the blessing we were going to invoke that day. When we finished with that, we took on the keys of Yeshua. And that took us actually 24 chapters, which means 24 weeks. Give or take a few weeks that we took off for holiday or some other reason or vacation, but it was a good part of the rest of the year. In fact, we just finished it a few weeks ago. And so Nancy and I were talking, and she said, well, what are we going to do next? Well, we do have other books, but I don't know that everybody has is as familiar with those. And I like to bring in things that are universally discussed in our community so that most quotes I could take would mean something to somebody. So what we decided to do is just pick and choose highlights from Love Without End and focus on the highlights, not a chapter now. So we're not going to cover a chapter. And sometimes it took 3 weeks to get a chapter covered. So it was a pretty long project. And this is going to be really nice because we're going to cherry pick the best. Of course, it's all good, but some of everybody's favorite passages. What we're working through right now is pathways to success in Love Without End. And we started last week with not the first pathway. There's actually four principal ways to make our life better. And I started with the third one, which that may seem kind of out of order, but I just felt that we needed to go there. And we're gonna go to number two now. So I'm sort of meandering through it, but a lot has to do with how I can use it to bring us into better contact with the world we're living in. This one we're really going to be talking about do the right thing. Just do the right thing. And you might think, well, what isn't that a kind of personal for each person? And yes, it is. But that's not all it is. There's a better way to get a grasp on what the right thing is and focus on it and apply it to your life. And so we're gonna take a deeper look at that and bring it more into focus for making our choices in life. Nancy, while I'm getting my notes in front of me and a little water to sip on, what would you like to bring new today?
Oh, well, what would I like to bring new today? Just an attitude of gratitude, like you said, and a joy for, living. Because, I mean, the abundance of life, if we don't see it, it's just, it's always there, and it's a miracle. So, and I've got all these little ones around me, so it's easy for me to see this following life and the living that we talked about last week. But I'm glad I'm going back to doing the right thing, because that is personal. People say, well, how do you know what the right thing is? And somebody else will think it's not the right thing. And I'm glad we're going to go over that today. So other than that, I just have to offer just my love and my heart today to everybody. I'm excited that we're going to be studying some more together, and that these, you know, meaty parts of Love Without End are going to surface, and we're going to revisit them, because to apply things to our life really is what matters. You know, it's nice to study, but to make it real, that's what we're here to do together. So thank you, Glenda.
Yeah, I love to make things real, because since I had my first conversation with Yeshua, he just basically said, okay, bye, girl, now you go make it work. And I went, huh? So
right.
it's been a long learning experience for me, and mostly it had to do with taking his conversations with me, his teachings to me, into my pathway of life, finding out how to apply it. And so while I'm talking about the title of this chapter, I want to take you through the four principles. Let's just get started with that. We're not going to dive deep into all of them, but the first principle is, be the love that you are. That's your orientation. That's the path. That's the orientation that will take you always to the best choices on the best pathways for you. And we'll take that up probably next week. And last week we followed, follow life in the living. And I thought that was so appropriate last week to follow after Easter and the coming of spring, because, you know, that's what our attention is on right now. The trees are all budding out. The tulips are up, or maybe they've already bloomed and just putting out leaves now, but it's still springtime. Everything is blooming, freshening up, and getting a new glow on. So I thought, you know, we just got to look at that today. And there's really no sequence in all of these. The only sequence is really the sequence in which he taught me. But they could all be approached independently or in any sequence. The last one being forgive. We gotta forgive, because if we don't, we'll keep staying on those old pathways that didn't work for us. The withholding of forgiveness is like having a bungee cord tied to your foot, your leg, your ankle, shall we say. And the other end is attached to, a rock that you're dragging along in an old pathway. You can't cut it loose. You can't let go. You can't take your mind off of it. You gotta forgive in order to get both legs free to be on a future path. So we're going to look at that probably next time. And the last one I think we're going to do is be the love that you are, because that summarizes everything. But today we're going to focus on do the right thing. And, you know, we might think, well, is that just about morality, prescriptions for living, codes for behavior, regulations, follow the law? Well, it's all of those things, but not anchored in all of those things. You know, there are many, many right things that are the same as morality. But morality can be restrictive if applied to every creative activity. Like, there were times in even recent history of art, people couldn't paint certain things, or they couldn't paint it a certain way, especially if it was political or just kind of out of the box for general propriety. So it can be restrictive. And it was a big upsurgence to get rid of the restrictions. And I think that was one of the major drives behind abstract art that took over much of the 20th century. And I'm talking about painting here. There's all kinds of art forms. But music went the same way. You know, it brought in forms of music that had never been popular before. It brought in blues, bluegrass, hillbilly, country, cowboy, so many forms of music in many genres. And literature did too. And movies did. We moved way beyond the restrictions of the past. And did that make it wrong? Well, no. It brought in maybe a new spirit of review, so that we didn't go too far over the line, too fast, but we're still reaching out. I mean, we're breaking through boundaries right now and, trying innovative, approaches to sound, innovative approaches to harmony, instruments. The same is true for literature and movies. So no, I don't think you can limit doing the right thing only to morality, because morality has to constantly be revised. And as Yeshua told me, that it's about what brings a better result to life. What makes things better? Rightness is more aligned to goodness than it is to activities that are permitted by guidelines and boundaries. What about activities that have never been done before? Those couldn't be limited by boundaries that pre-exist. They've never been done before. How could we know what certain things are that we explore for the first time? Or territories that have never been entered, and not just geographical, I'm talking about scientific, health, social. We can't inhibit ourselves by too many limitations. There's got to be an element of just good judgment that we apply to whatever we do to limit risk, to limit harm that might come from it, and to give us an orientation toward positive results. The first chapter of Genesis gives us an excellent example of how big the scope of goodness can be. At the end of every segment of universal creation, it was reviewed by God. He looked it over. He inspected it. He surveyed everything he created. And he said, and this is good. He approved it. This is good. Well, that territory he was approving was enormous. One of them was just the creation of light. That belongs to everything in physical creation, possibly to more levels than that. But it's good. The firmament is good. Light and dark, that's good. The planet, the plants, the animals, that's good. He put his stamp of approval on everything he created. Okay? That's the background you should consider with regard to an assertion I have made many times here, and that is that he didn't create what we call the world. Because in the world, there's not just goodness. And that's what God says. That's what Jesus says. That's what the saints have said. There's good and there's bad in the world. There's good and evil in the world. In what God created, there was no evil. I mean, you need to really, really look at that, because so many people think, well, good and evil go all the way back to the beginning of existence. No, they don't. Not if you read and listen to your Bible, they don't. Evil only appeared when the world was beginning to be created. And what did he do right before the world was created? He gave it to Adam and Eve. And he said, okay, you take it from here. We brought the duality. We brought the good and evil, which means we have a responsibility to choose what we're going to do, what we're going to create, and to choose if what we do is a good thing. Now, that's where this pathway is so essential to life, because you're constantly going to get stopped or have to rewrite what you're doing, reconsider, go back and start over if you don't make the right choices. You know, and like I said, morality is a good thing, generally speaking, but it doesn't keep up with all the growth and the practical social needs that we face today, as compared to the way it might have been 20 years ago or a century ago. We've got to stay up with what works, what creates betterment of life. Here's a simple example that of morality changing. Oh, lots of morality changed in the 20th century. I mean, I could find a lot more intense subjects to discuss. But this is kind of an innocent one, so I'll take this up because any audience could hear this. But throughout history, and I think there may have been some exceptions in some cultures, but I think pretty much most cultures, women were forbidden to wear pants. And I'm just talking about trousers, I'm not talking about blue jeans or anything tight or revealing, just trousers. And even though the women fought in battles or plowed fields with their husbands and brothers, they had to wear skirts. No trousers allowed. Nothing that exposed the fact they had two legs. Not at all. No. It was actually grounds for banishment from the family. I mean, it was considered a serious act of immorality. In the 20th century, even, the women worked in factories that built essential defense products for our military. Some of them were enlisted in the military. Could they wear pants? No, they couldn't. Women were not legally, and I want to emphasize the word legal as if it should ever have been relevant, but it was. They were legally permissioned to wear pants in the 1950s. I will never forget the first day I wore pants to school. I'm forgetting exactly when the year was. I think it was mid-50s. Anyway, I rode my bicycle with joy that day. Yeah. And then I didn't have to change my clothes to ride my horse and do my chores and feel comfortable with life. And all of that really stemmed from tradition and public opinion, which had nothing to do with what is really workable. Yeshua said morality is change for the better, or life for the better, actions for the better. The emphasis for him was on making life better. You can't ally righteousness with public opinion or popularity either, because almost all of those things were cultivated by years prior, building up momentum of people just agreeing about the way something should be. You can't catch up to the truth either, nor outrun it with human agreement. You can't outrun truth. The eternal underwriting of rightness is truth. Now, I'm not saying that this is, when I'm referring to truth, I'm not referring to philosophical or theological proclamations about the nature of life and the universe. Those belong in their special realms where they have relevance and they can provide guidance for us. But I'm talking about it in life, the way we live it. Truth is the constant, reliable foundation we stand on in life. It's about the sun rising, the sun setting. It's about gravity. It's about when the seasons come about. It's about saving back some seeds from the last year so you've got something to plant this coming year. These are reliable foundations upon which life works. Truth is almost impossible to define or prescribe. It is simply too big. It is probably best revealed by consequences and by the future that truth can provide us. As a matter of fact, just about everything Yeshua taught his disciples was about consequences and future. On the most expanded plane, he would teach them about the coming of the kingdom of heaven. And on the everyday practical level, he would teach them parables like, what you sow, that will you reap. Or into even agricultural management by the parable of the fig tree. He found this fig tree that probably hadn't borne any fruit for years. And yet it was so abundant with branches and leaves, and its trunk was huge. And he mentioned the gardener, or this was part of a vineyard. The vineyard master came up and asked him what he was talking about and preaching to his apostles. And he said, And he asked him, what are you talking about? And he said, I'm teaching them about what is and is not productive. I'm telling them that you should cut down this fig tree. And the vineyard keeper said, what? Cut down this fig tree? But it's huge. It's beautiful. It's been here for years. Why would I cut it down? Because it doesn't produce any figs. He said, we walked up here. We're hungry. We need that fig tree to have done what it's supposed to do. And so the vineyard master said, well, all right, let's give it one more year and see if it can produce any fruit. And Yeshua blessed it. He gave it, his love, his encouragement for better performance and possibly a bath of fresh new energy to produce with. He came back a year later and it was full of fruit. And so he was very proud of it and he said, okay, it can live. He was very, very focused upon what produces. And it's not because he would have any kind of evil judgment about it. It's because what doesn't produce is not connected to goodness and not connected to truth. What did God say in the book of Genesis? Everything he created was good, which means there was truth underlying it. Something doesn't produce, there's something wrong. Now maybe all you got to do is some accounting, some repair, some nourishment, maybe a little bit of better or proper alignment, sort of like the equivalent of fertilizing that fig tree. Sometimes that's enough. But you got to do something. You don't just let something draw energy from the earth or from your life and not produce. It will drain you. It will destroy the good things you're doing because you won't have enough energy to devote yourself to all the good things you have. And that's one reason why when we go into prayer about anything, we first acknowledge everything that's working for us, everything good that we need to praise and nurture. Because there just may be a fig tree we need to cut down. And that's just a metaphor. It could be a project that just drains energy. You know, you've got good people employed to take care of it. And pretty soon, most good people are going to be out of a job because you can't keep them on a project that doesn't earn anything. So you've got to be managing consequence and future. Everything that is good will have a future. Everything that is nurtured and productive will have good consequences. And that was a theme all the way through in everything that Yeshua taught his apostles and set out to the world. He sent apostles out to the world just to teach. And he was giving them all of these very practical things that I'm giving you. Because he knew they would need that in order to get the message. You go out with mystical ideas and they'll say, oh, well, fine, but we've already got our gods. Really? He got to them because he went out with what worked, created by the one God that created this universe. He got them in connection. You don't feel connected to God? One of the best ways you can do it is start doing what works. Regardless of ideals. Ideals are not, sometimes they'll take you to God, but you don't need them to take you to God. The best thing to take you to God is what works. He created a land that works. He created a body that works. He created communities that work. Focus on what works and do the right thing. And now in all of that, you may start feeling a little bit of pride from God, a little appreciation, like, son, you did good work there. I'm really proud of you. You might be feeling not just the rewards that you created from your work, but a little extra blessing that goes along with it. What father isn't proud of his child? Really? And sure, because of that, you have a shelter to sleep in. You have food to eat. But he might also include a cone of ice cream for you. He might include a bicycle. He's gonna take note of what extra brings you joy. And that extra that brings you joy will be your motivation to continue doing the right thing. So, you know, I think one of the best examples I can give you, and it really pertains to one of the biggest conflicts we have in the world now, and I'm not going to get political about it, don't worry about that. You know I don't go there. But did Yeshua do the right thing? He collected he collected apostles from every work of life, the common man, and eventually their sisters, and, you know, other women who could conduct the ministry, although in those days and times they tended to stay close to their families because they weren't generally welcome as single women going out on the road unless they had a brother to go with them. And we do have some known women apostles who did have brothers. I'm going to mainly use the male gender because that's most of what went out to the world. But they came from every walk of life, and they were common men. I mean, like tax collectors, carpenters, fishermen. It doesn't get any more common than that. They were people used to surviving and teaching other people how to survive. So they went out to the world, and they made contacts with people that needed help surviving. And they taught them how to survive better and use it as a teaching tool to lift them up. Up is the way out. You can't, you know, I'll get to that in a minute, but I just want to make this point. Now, from that small band of originally 12, which got expanded in the first generation pretty quickly, but not huge. It was still small. It was going out and creating communities. Now, we've got over a billion Christians on this planet. Over a billion. Did he do the right thing? I think so. And this is one of the things I just want to say to ease your heart and your mind and your worry. There's no need to worry about the survival of Christianity against whatever forces might contend with it. We are the biggest. He did his work well. And we're right on the edge of being given the new insights, revelations about the next stage of humanity, the next gratuity and gratitude for earning and being blessed. Get yourself ready for what good is coming. Take your mind off the conflict and let's bless those that are worried about their religion. Let's bless the, you know, there's just one God. There's some pathways that we don't understand, maybe we don't agree with, but there's just one God. And people can worry about the survival of their life. They don't have what we have. Let's pray for them. Let's love them. Let's see this world rise to such a high level that there are no more conflicts. I really believe on the level of the saints, there aren't any conflicts. And wouldn't you rather just be there? Wouldn't you rather just see yourself blessed, so blessed in life, you just start climbing through the elevator, and pretty soon you're looking down on an earth where the troubles of the world are just dissolving. And they will, because God didn't create them. The only thing that is everlasting is what God created. I want you to remember that. Maybe write it down on a poster and put it on your wall. The only thing everlasting is what God created. The rest of it seems to have its place along the choice line that we are called to make about our life. Yeshua talked about the choices we make. And he spent some good time on it. That I'm going to talk to you a little bit more when we get into the part of this chapter about forgiveness, because it's really more relevant there. See, we don't like to change our mind. That's one of our problems about forgiveness. We don't like to be wrong. But the fact is, in everything in life, we're given a choice. Yeah. And there's basically three platforms we make our choices on. And I want to tell you, solidly, without need for revision, really, there are three choices we make. Three platforms we make our choices on. One is conformity. What the books and everybody else say we should do. It's just conformity. Doesn't mean it's right. It's just conformity. But that seems to be the safest way to make our choices. And also, the best way to avoid responsibility. And that's one of the reasons we make choices from conformity. We can deflect the consequences onto, well, that's what everybody thought. That's what everybody's doing. That's just where we were in life, you know? Well, it'll get you to the next place of where you are in life, which is the need for revision. And we don't like to do that. Okay. The other way, which is actually very prevalent in the world today, is we choose from fear. We're afraid of something. And we're going to make a choice to correct something or conflict with something we're afraid of. We're going to fight what we're afraid of. We're going to judge what we're afraid of, condemn what we're afraid of. Okay, it's not going to work. When you choose from fear, you get the consequences of fear, which are weeds in the garden. And they're going to weed out anything positive that could have come from the good things that are also there. And the third platform to choose from It's love. Well, you could have guessed that. That's what Yeshua taught his apostles to choose from. Even if you don't understand it, even if it doesn't provide all the answers yet, choosing from love will get you the best results. Because God created from love. And he evaluated his creation as that's good. So you choose from love. And it's all right. It's all right to guard yourself a little bit from those around you who are trying to activate fear or force you into conformity. You can be polite. You don't have to be irritated or disagreeable. In fact, those things aren't very compatible with love. Just do what you are called to do. And you do have a choice. After I had had my conversations with Yeshua and been in those days of love, he said, now take it to the world. And I went, oh, heavenly days. That? I have to do that? Well, the two things I worried about most, well, the first one is, which makes a little sense, since I am a mild-mannered, educated woman, I thought about, how can I make this acceptable to other people? Well, that's conformity. How can I find, you know, platforms of agreement where, I can really get it across? And the other platform I was really looking at was being the recipient of Rotten Tomatoes, if not even Rotten Eggs, or possibly condemnation, censorship, hatred, exile. What if I have to encounter all of those things? Well, I couldn't make a decision from either of those platforms because all of his messages and the painting were all done from love. And so I said, okay, I can't even think about this from love because I don't know what that entails. I don't know where it's going to lead me. But he asked me to do it, so I'm going to call up my courage and I'm just going to go to a church and tell them what I learned. I'm just going to do it. Sometimes that's all that's necessary is showing up. And I'll tell you why. And we'll go into the proof of why this works next week. Love is who you are. There's nothing more innocent and ingratiating than just being willing to show up for someone else. Just willing to be there, no matter what they say or what they do, you just show up. And everything starts to change. And if you don't pick up on fear, if you don't try too hard to be a conformist, you just continue to just be the love you are. It might even just be like at a PTA meeting and they're wanting to go the conformist route, but you wanted to protect your little girl. And they're coming at you with arguments and all you have to say, you know, I don't know where this is going to go, but I'll tell you where I'm going to go. I love my child and I'm going to be here with my child no matter what. That has more power than anything else you could say. Because I'll tell you something, when you argue with a person who's angry, you just put gasoline on their anger. when you resist a person who's in fear, you just give them every opportunity to resist you even more. When you find ways to present love, you might just ignite, inspire, or at least stimulate some spark of love within them. And before I close, I just want to say, love the way Yeshua was talking about, the way he taught about, was not affection. It was not cuddling up. It was not emotional agreement. It was not the welling up of just extremely positive emotions that you throw at somebody who hates you. You'll just give them reason to hate you more. Don't do that. It won't work. They feel insulted that you would throw positive emotion at them when they hate you. They will be thinking and saying, are you stupid? No. You show them your love. That is who you are. Now, that's what we're going to talk about next week. So just show up for the next chapter, and we're going to have a good time with that. And I really, really enjoyed being with you today. We covered some important points, and I hope you liked it. I hope you learned from it. And it's my pleasure being here for you. Well, Nancy, it's your turn now.
I just am so in awe how he weaved all this, how you weaved all this. You know, it is this wonderful circle. I just love how each one builds and you can keep going back and forth. And, you know, the idea, you know, when we studied about life and everything you said today supports life. Doing the right thing mm-hmm. puts you in harmony with life. And he said mm-hmm. that. And, you know, I just am always so touched that we're honored so much to be our own unique love in a situation that others might say, you know, you shouldn't say it that way or do it that way. But then when you do and they see you doing that, you're right. It gives them, you might spark something in them to give them that inspiration and power within themselves. He said, you know, I'm reading in Pathways to Success while I just opened it up, and he had said, you know, just doing the right thing, you are in harmony with life. Without having
That's
to
right.
confine yourself to some limiting formula of what others might consider to be proper behavior. That follows on what you were talking about, you know, morality
conformity.
And all that. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and conformity. And it's like, wow, you know, you can be brave. Don't worry just because you're following life. And last week talking about life and the abundance of life and the universe has a priority to life and the living. I mean, we're talking, what did he say? I can't give you life and life more abundant. Okay. What is it? We're experiencing life, folks, when we really get it and we live it, and it's just oozing out of us, and it's pretty exciting when you really connect in these ways with each other because people are hungry for it. And so we're all little ministers and little apostles, folks, every day, mm-hmm. right? So thank you, Glenda. Yeah, thank you, because, you know, I am excited. We can go back and forth, back and forth. We skipped around. You didn't have to go from one to the next. And it's amazing how they build and how, you know, I really am going to study this more.
Yeah, everything he taught builds because it comes from his union with God the Father. And
right.
there is no division. There is no division in God. And that's probably the most important evidence or reason not to believe in good and evil at that level. There is no division in God. The division occurred after God turned it over to us.
Right. And then we put more faith in structure than we do in God. And that's where all the anxiety comes from, that we don't have that belief in the,
well,
you know, oftentimes.
That's also conformity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Structure is the product of engineering on some level.
Well, and thank you for saying that about putting gas on the fire there first. I was thinking about a personal situation, and it really made a lot of sense. It's so true.
Well, don't argue with an angry person.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh. They're just saying, come on, I need some more gasoline. And they're the one already tanked up.
Yeah, exactly. Be the love you are. Just find ways more to show that. I love it. It's so good. Isn't this wonderful, everybody? If anybody has a question, a prayer request, a blessing they need, a blessing that's been answered, something that you want to share, we are right at 3:56. Glenda, do you want me to open the line?
Well, yeah, if we have someone on it.
All right, here we have a caller.
Great.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, you made me think, and I remember this all the time, about a great blessing that I received from God when I was 8 years old. I asked God to speak to me like Abraham. I've had that all my life. He asked me to pray for Russia, and I did that until the USSR became Russia. But at that same time, I asked God, well, what else would you have me do? And he says, anything that you want, I will support, because I know you will do the right thing. What a blessing. At 8 years old.
That's amazing. And so true. I mean, you were so tuned in. You really were.
And something
that you've been tuned in all your life, Stormy, so, and that's why.
You know, that is just an incredible blessing to think about an 8-year-old boy who would even think to ask God to speak to them like Abraham. And he gave me all this scientific knowledge. And
I would actually expect it more from an 8-year-old boy than I would from a 28-year-old young man trying to make it in the world.
We're innocent, and we don't know that we can't do that. Because, you know, and I've had that ultimate faith in God all my years. That's why I, like when I asked for Van Cliburn to hear my music one day, I trusted in the Lord that at age 10, he would provide. I forgot about it. And some 30 years later, when Van was ready to hear me play the piano, that was when it happened. And so, you know, I wait upon the Lord. I have absolute faith. And it wasn't my timing. It was actually Van's timing to hear my music and hear me play the piano. So that, to have that faith and to share that with each other.
Yeah. Thank you, Stormy, for sharing that story about your life. We really love you and appreciate you.
And thank you for being who you are, Nancy. That was my wife's name, so it's dear to me.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
Glenda, we don't have any more callers, but we can hold the line a moment if anybody wants to jump on and share anything or have a question about today's lesson, doing the right thing. Otherwise, we are really clear.
I just want to say thank you to so many people who use our special email address for asking a blessing, because it gives me a time to contemplate on your need, your desire, or other loved ones in your life that need a special attention. And what we are calling forth and asking for from Yeshua is his blanket of blessing for all of us that will spread a protective shield over our life and also penetrate into the many layers of our life that need to have a little extra loving care.
You know, we can go through life and neglect certain parts of our life until all of a sudden it's not working so well and we panic. That's not really the right attitude to have about healing. When something isn't working, we need to approach it almost like the love we would have for a child or a beloved pet or even a plant in our garden that's wilting. And we just think, we don't panic. We give that plant a little bit of water and we kind of look at the symptoms and the evidence about what it needs. The same thing about a child. We find out, we talk to the little kid and we say, honey, what's wrong? What do we need to take care of? And in the process, you give him a hug. You don't panic. You give that little one a hug and a conversation. And what would you like to do? What would make you happy? You get him to talking to you a little bit. Well, see, I like to get you talking about the need you have, because when you talk about it, it shows that you're willing to be receptive. You're willing to be vulnerable. You could use a little bit of attention. Okay? And we all need a little bit of attention, or maybe a lot of attention, but you'll be surprised how much good you can get with a little attention from the right source. And one of the reasons that we are not getting some attention in our life is because we're not going to the right source for it. We're not asking in the right way. We may be going to get conventional medical opinions. And I'm not saying something bad about conventional medicine. I have family members who were celebrated doctors. I have love for the profession and the devotion people have in being in it. It's just they don't always have the answer. They don't always have the technology. And so we have doubts about, well, is this the right thing to do? See, we're getting back to the question of the right thing. And that's when prayer can make an enormous difference. Not so much that you will receive the ultimate answer from prayer, although you may receive that too, but you will receive confirmations through feeling, intuition, or redirection about how to seek the answer from the right place. Just keep in mind, a little bit of attention from the right place, the right person, can make all the difference. Now, in order to make the connection be as fully blossomed as possible today, I want you to do two things. First of all, I just want you to invoke a spirit of gratitude toward all the blessings you already have. I want you to take then some really deep breaths. And I'm not talking about some power breath, like athletic breath, like you're going to take a deep breath so you're ready to lunge into a run. I want you to take a full deep breath, yes, but to nurture your body. And then I want you to release it slowly. Because breath is the rhythm of your life. It's what activated your heart the moment you were free and born. It's been the rhythm of your life ever since. And sometimes rhythm restored is a major activating force for greater good, because it puts you in rhythm with life. All of life has its own rhythm, and it flows, because all of life is just energy. That's it. In one frequency or another, in one rhythm or another, and rhythms that flow in harmony are rhythms that reinforce the goodness and the possibility that they're bringing. So I want you to get up now if you can. Otherwise, do what you can where you are and get your body a little bit active. Okay? Move. So you started with breath. You started with just breath. Now I want you to move into action. And I'm not suggesting vigorous action. Just whatever you can do. And if it's just your fingers, your hands, reaching, especially reaching up, because this reverses some of the gravitational pull that has been on your body, drawing it down, whether into your chair or into a walking position, whatever it might happen to be. So just try. Now try stretching your leg. Okay? See what you can get. Okay? Pull your foot up, okay? I just got a great message from somebody confirming that she was healed of something that had been bothering her. Congratulations. God bless you. And God bless all of us. God bless you, everyone. Feel the energy. Feel it pouring through you. And energy doesn't have any prejudices. Energy doesn't have any blockages. You are the one that may impose a feeling of unworthiness, a feeling of doubt, a feeling of reservations. Can this work? Will it work? Can I count on the power of God to be with me? Well, just be neutral. Just be neutral. That's all I ask of you. Nancy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I just was in mute mode, so I had to get myself back on. You are loud. You're loud and clear. There were just a few pauses, but you're great.
Okay. All right. I was afraid I lost connection after I came out of the last pause, but we're fine because I want to offer my prayer to Yeshua because he asked us to. Why? Because he wants us to initiate the connection. You see, God prevails. He's here always. It's for us to make the connection. That is the primary choice you make in your life. All through your life, from the beginning to the end, there is no end, but there is a transition out of physical life. Yes, you make the connection. So here, I'm going to make this connection for all of us. And then you follow through making a connection for your life and what you need. Be bold about it, but start with gratitude. Start with expectation. And then follow with love and joy for seeing everything you need be given to you. And it will be. These are the expressions that God cherishes. He already loves you, but he gets super excited when he knows that you're getting it. Just like a baby that latches on for the first time and he has mother's milk. And mother is so excited. So excited. And the first time daddy manages to teach little boy Robert how to throw a ball. And he really does it. And dad's going, yes. And he stomps the ground. You know, we get excited when somebody we assist really gets what we're trying to help them do. And that excitement is part of it. Okay, but now let's go back to where we are. I'm going to offer my prayer to Yeshua. Yeshua, Son of God, Lord of life, we are so grateful just to have you in our presence and to know that you can be in the presence of each and every one because of your pervasive outreach through all existence. We love you for being here. We love that you've accepted us to extend and ask for connection with you. And right now we're dialing your number. We're here. We want to talk to you. We want to be with you. And we want you to be with us. We love you. We don't really have the words to express how much we love you because sometimes we don't even feel worthy of it. But thank you for trying to lift us above that to where we can receive and honor more blessings in life. We thank you for maintaining peace in our world despite the raging conflicts that keep trying to erupt. We thank you for loving everybody in spite of all the judgment and fear that keeps trying to reign in our world. And we just say we look forward to rising above all of this to be with you. We look forward to just knowing that love is who we are and be able to share that knowledge with other people. Be with the children, for they still know. Help us to know
their value to us is awesome. The treasure the children are to us. Thank you for taking care of our plants and animals in this really troubled environment that just piles up with more trouble every year. Thank you for cleansing it and bringing all of the energy that can layer harmony upon us and suck the dirt out. Please hear the prayer of each person here today. Please, please be with them. And know that it's totally in their heart now to be with you. And we ask all of these things in your magnificent spirit and name. Amen. Amen. Blessing givers, will you stand and join me now as we offer the blessing? Amen. Amen. And amen. Your blessing has been given. Now, I want you to continue receiving. And the best way to carry it forward is to start with 7 minutes, at least, could be longer, of lying flat. I want you lying horizontal, completely flat, not propped up, flat, on your bed or the sofa or a mat on the floor, something that allows you to have that truly neutral horizontal position. Nothing is above anything else. All right? And receive. But don't even continue your prayer, because your prayer will be directed toward things, needs, or issues. We want you in a completely relaxed, neutral state of mind. And just be that way for at least 7 minutes. Then you can just get up and get on with your day. Your blessings will come as you strike up chords and harmony in life with the things that have been appointed to activate the blessings for you. They may already be pouring upon your body right now, but they also may have a timing that has to come a little bit later. So just be open. Have a very blessed week. And just be the love that you are. That's your best connection, always, with the Holy of Holies. Bye-bye for now.